You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
The FBI and the Department of Homeland Security warn that Hidden Cobra is actively pursuing DDoS campaigns. Microsoft patches the remaining Shadow Broker's exploits, even in deprecated systems. The U.S. Congress votes to sanction Russia for election influence operations. Electrical and natural gas sectors work to protect themselves against crash override. Mergers and acquisitions seem to be followed by layoffs. Hexadite is said to be the latest case. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, June 15, 2017. The U.S. FBI and Department of Homeland Security warn that North Korea's government is responsible for a botnet being called Hidden Cobra that's been making trouble for some time. Believed to be connected to that well-known threat actor, the Lazarus Group, Hidden Cobra used Delta Charlie malware to herd botnets for distributed denial-of-service attacks against media, aerospace, infrastructure, and financial targets. U.S. businesses appear to have received the most attention, but Hidden Cobra's hood is thought to cover the globe. Kaspersky Lab, in a comment on U.S. CERT's warning, says that the tools mentioned in the technical advisory have been observed in the wild in some 26 countries, including, in addition to the U.S., France, Brazil, and Russia. As was the case with the WannaCry threat actors, who've also been connected, although with less consensus, to the Lazarus Group and the North Korean regime, Hidden Cobra shows a strong preference for beyond end-of-life and unpatched Microsoft Windows instances. Recognizing the magnitude of this problem, Microsoft this week has taken the unusual step of issuing patches for retired Windows versions. The exploits addressed, the last of those leaked by the Shadow Brokers, include Exploding CAN, which targets old versions of the Internet Information Services web server to permit remote code execution, Esteem Audit, a flaw in Windows Remote Desktop Protocol, and Englishman Dentist, which permits remote code execution in object linking and embedding. Redmond says it's decided to patch because of the unusually elevated threat of state actors using exploits in the wild the Shadow Brokers leaked in April. It's warned users not to expect patching of deprecated systems to become the norm. Indeed, some observers have criticized Microsoft's decision as likelier to prolong the agony than to ameliorate the problem. The U.S. Congress has voted overwhelmingly to sanction Russia over its probing of U.S. electoral machinery. Other recent sanctions have addressed Russian incursions into Ukraine. Sanctions are now being leveled in response to election influence operations. Those operations have been shown recently to have been more extensive and persistent than hitherto believed. Most of the Russian activity, beyond the now well-known doxing of the Democratic Party and Clinton presidential campaign, seem to have concentrated on accessing voter registration data. Those data were put to use in 11th-hour spear phishing campaigns, and also in some preliminary attempts at altering voter information in state databases. There's much understandable dudgeon in Congress over Russian influence operations, and for all the furor, one might be forgiven for concluding that this is something new. In fact, it's not. Historians and security experts point out that such activities, both black propaganda and election influence operations, are nothing new. The website War on the Rocks, for one, usefully traces their history back 8 decades. The publication tells a story more lurid than the most overheated conspiracy theories today, whether left or right, have imagined. From roughly 1937 on, U.S. Representative Samuel Dickstein was on the payroll of the NKVD, the Stalin era's ancestor of the KGB, and now, of course, the FSB. Dickstein, Democrat of New York, was the founding co-chair of, wait for it, the House Un-American Activities Committee, later famous as the young Representative Richard Nixon's launching point to national prominence. Representative Dickstein not only served as an agent of influence, but he also assisted NKVD illegals in obtaining passports and other materials necessary to their free operation in the United States. His successes were limited largely on the Soviet side. His NKVD handlers were on several occasions purged and shot. What is new today is the enabling role the Internet now plays in rapid dissemination of unfiltered fish stories, and in opening up many new access points to information that up through the first two-thirds of the 20th century would have required a black bag job to obtain. A special congressional election in the U.S. state of Georgia draws attention to voting system security weaknesses, and Georgia is unlikely to be alone. The special election, which concludes June 20th, is being watched closely as an index of the general vulnerability of U.S. election systems. If you're in IT, chances are you've got coworkers coming to you from time to time to ask for your help with their personal devices, their laptops or mobile devices. FireMon recently conducted a survey of 350 security IT pros and found that 83% of them regularly help coworkers with personal computer problems, and 80% of them say it takes more than an hour per week. That adds up. Michael Callahan is chief marketing officer at FireMon.
What we thought people were going to say was they were spending almost all of their time just firefighting, right? And which a lot of them were, just to keep up with the latest risk or the latest threat or incident or whatever it was. What we found was that they were saying quite a bit of their time was actually spent helping out their colleagues. Personal IT issues, so their laptops, their phones, their tablets, which was surprising to us.
So I can imagine many of our listeners who work in IT furiously nodding their heads in agreement at the notion that commonly asked to help coworkers with their personal devices. I'm curious because it strikes me that this is sort of part of the politics of everyday office life. You know, if the head of HR comes to me and says, "Hey, I'm having trouble with my phone," or "I can't figure out how to save this file on my laptop," I can't imagine someone just sort of shuffling that person away and saying, "No, I don't have time for you."
I think that's true. You can't just say no, because in some level it does impact the business, even though it's their personal devices. So even if the IT person wasn't helping, then the person is going to probably try to self-help, which takes away from their time to focus on their normal job because they're trying to download a patch or unfreeze something or whatever. So it is a little bit just of the daily politics. Or 80% of the IT people said that they were being asked to help fix things by personal things of their colleagues. So it wasn't like 5% or 10%. It was almost everyone, right? So it was 100%, but it was 80%. About the same amount, 80% of them said it takes more than an hour a week. So the impact is actually not immaterial across an organization.
If this is a reality and, for non-technical reasons, it would be hard to shut down this sort of thing. What are your suggestions for how organizations can deal with it?
I don't think it's going away, right? So to what you just said, you can't just say sorry and close your door. So I think there's another approach that has to happen is there is going to be an amount of time that people will need to devote to this. There's a couple things that the IT teams could do. They could have particular office hours where they open themselves up. So at least it's a little more contained. Although the downside of that is computers don't break between 9 and 10 in the morning. It's at varying times. But you could possibly consolidate some of the requests. Could you do things to free up more time so that the IT staff wasn't as stressed out? So when they're trying to manage the security infrastructure, give them tools that helps them automate that.
Right.
So give them the tool so that they're able to manage some of the more business related stuff, maybe a little more effectively.
That's Michael Callahan from FireMon. Crash override malware is receiving close attention at high levels of government and industry. Dragos analyzed crash override from samples obtained during investigation of last winter's Ukrainian power grid hack. Related sectors are watching the electrical industry's response closely. DNG, ISAC, and others suspect the malware may have implications for the natural gas industry as well. DNG ISAC, the security information organization of the downstream natural gas sector, is working closely with their counterparts in the electrical power sector to develop an effective response to crash override. Bitfinex, the world's largest Bitcoin exchange, began experiencing DDoS attacks Tuesday. They continued through yesterday, and the exchange seems not yet to have fully recovered. In industry news, Microsoft confirmed last week that it was buying Hexadyte. VentureBeat reports that Hexadyte laid off most of its U.S.-based workforce on the day of the announcement. And finally, to return to our earlier notes about the long-standing Russian policy of seeking to influence U.S. politics, we should note in the interest of clarity and historical accuracy that Richard Nixon was never identified as a paid Soviet agent. Whatever Mr. Nixon's dog Checkers' provenance may have been, it almost surely wasn't Moscow Central.
Hey everybody, today I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Joining me once again is Emily Wilson. She's the Director of Analysis at Terbium Labs. Emily, you know, we hear about these high-profile attacks, but you want to make the point that maybe those aren't the things that, in day-to-day operations, people need to be focused on.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we hear about attacks, whether it's something like Yahoo or LinkedIn or Ashley Madison or TalkTalk, you know, depending on your industry and what you're interested in. We hear about these breaches, and that's great. And, you know, these are, I think the press that we see around these can help to drive conversations about security and privacy as a whole. But I think it creates this sort of misconception that breaches happen to big companies and only to big companies, or that you only need to worry about the breaches that happen to big companies. And I think that really draws attention away from the fact that most of the data that I at least see all day, every day, isn't coming from the Yahoos of the world. It's coming from, you know, the place you get your car serviced, or, you know, the dentist that you see.
So it's, I mean, an analogy would be how people are worried about, you know, an airplane crashing when they're, you're more likely to get run over by a car crossing the street.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying we shouldn't make our planes safer, but you should also look both ways before you cross, and you should make sure that your brakes are working.
So when we see all these stories about 0 days, maybe that's not what we should be chasing after.
Yeah, I think in the same way that it's not the best use of energy or resources to focus only on big breaches and preventing big breaches, you know, I think there's a tendency to focus on the latest, sexiest exploit or the most popular strain of ransomware right now, when really what's happening every day, you know, this equivalent of, you know, kind of, you know, getting rear-ended, for example, are really the very simple things you don't want to hear about, you don't want to talk about, like phishing or, you know, people poking at, you know, known vulnerabilities in databases, right? The MongoDB, for example.
Right. The everyday sort of boring things that you have to deal with, the blocking and tackling that doesn't get very much attention. Obviously, that. So I guess what we're saying is, you know, beware of chasing shiny objects.
Absolutely. The shiny objects are always going to be there, and they're going to come along, and they're going to be interesting, and we should talk about them. But I think it creates this idea that, you know, these breaches, when they happen big and they happen loud and they happen in isolation, and you should be worried about one major attack. Well, you know, have you talked to your employees about clicking on links in their emails? Have you done it recently? How recently?
Emily Wilson, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.